This is Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the program this morning, we'll be talking about exits, about leave takings in life, about how they can be difficult, but also open new possibilities, but perhaps also how overall these are things that it's difficult to prepare for, at least as a society. We're not very good at that. We have, as our guest in the first part of the show, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot will be talking about her book, Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Before we do that, however, we need to begin by asking for your support for the station. Now, that's what we're doing here for a couple of days because we're getting close to the end of our fiscal year. And that's important because the money that will support next year's programming needs to be in the bank by that point. So that's the end of next week. And actually, in terms of our fundraising, we've had a pretty good year. We're close to where we want to be, but not exactly there. So we're making the appeal this morning, and I'm so very happy to be spending here the morning with Molly Delaney. She's our Education Outreach Director for Illinois Public Media, and she is here to help me make the pitch to encourage people to support this station.
And I'm honored to be here. I can't think of any place I would rather be than in the studio with David. And I just got great news. You know, we were talking about we're exiting one fiscal year and entering another, so it's very appropriate that we're talking about this today. We have over $4,000 that we've raised so far today. So we're going to set a goal for our listeners to say we want another 1,000 before the end of Focus. We're going to get it. I can feel it. And we're also looking for a goal of raising $10,000 today. It would be a great way to finish out, make the exit on this particular fiscal year. But we need your help. So we want you to go to the phone, call 244-9455, or go to willpledge.org and let us know that you support our broadcasting, you support this kind of programming, and make this a record-setting year for us. Make this a record-setting hour. Make it a record-setting 2 hours.
We could do that, no problem, as long as people will go to the phone and dial that number, 244-9455, or go online, willpledge.org.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, thank you very much. Well, this is Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Saying goodbye is an unavoidable part of life. Now, every day there are little goodbyes that we engage in. But our guest for the program, sociologist Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, says that, in fact, these small goodbyes can be very important because they help us teach us how to handle the bigger transitions, the major transitions in our lives. So we'll talk this morning about how we might gracefully take our leave, and that is something that she writes about in her book, Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free, and it's published by Ferris Strauss Giroux. You can look for it wherever you get your books. Our guest, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, is a professor of education at Harvard University, where since 1972 she has studied the culture of families and communities and schools and the relationships between human development and social change, and that she is with us this morning by telephone. And Professor Lawrence Lightfoot, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for
good
talking
morning.
To us.
Very good to be on.
And I have right here from the beginning, and in fact, Namali and I talked about this before we got going. I've been encouraged to talk a little personally. Now, I don't want to make the program about me, but I have to say that I chose this. I thought it would be good to have this conversation, both because I think it was just a good topic, but because I am approaching a big goodbye here in my life, because at the end of next week, I am retiring.
Wow, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And you know, I've been here for 35 years.
Wow.
And have been involved in this program for 30 years. So believe me, this is a big goodbye, and I don't know how to do it. So
yes.
I thought maybe by having by looking at your book and having the conversation, that it would at least help me and perhaps also some of the people who are listening. So I definitely cannot hold this topic at arm's length.
No.
I cannot.
And it's true that people who read this book take it personally. It is not a book that you can hold at arm's length, because all of us at various points in our lives, all across our lives, are making big exits, you know, exits that are major markers in our lives, as well as you pointed out earlier, we're making the smaller exits every single day, the ordinary exits that are threaded through our daily life. But approaching a big exit as momentous as yours, it seems to me, is incredibly important. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is because as a culture, we tend to be so preoccupied with beginnings, with launchings, with embarkings. You know, we're always sort of tilting forward. What's next? We're seizing the next opportunity. And we often neglect and don't pay adequate attention, I argue in this book, to our leave takings, our departures. They tend to be considered retreats or even negative spaces in our life narratives. And this book is saying we need to pay attention to exits because they offer us half the story of our life journeys. They need to be times of reflection and propulsion. They need to be times of retrospection and generativity. And they require, I think, more of our attention in order to do them well.
Yeah. And it's certainly those exits can be times, depending upon the situation, can be times of great stress and strain and sadness and unhappiness. And particularly if this is, if perhaps it's an exit that you're being forced into that's not your, that was not your choice.
Right.
So one could see why some grief maybe would be attached to them.
Absolutely.
I
think that most people, whether they're making exits, frankly, that are forced or chosen, experience some grief, some loss, some emptiness, some ambivalence, some confusion as they move on to the next. And for this book, I interviewed probably 45 people who were making exits of a wide variety across at various points in their developmental journeys, their life course. And one of the things that was true about all of them was whether it was forced or whether it was chosen, that there were these moments of ambivalence and, your word, grief and loss. But it's also true that often these feelings of grief and loss and ambivalence were mixed with this other experience of liberation and relief and possibility and opportunity.
Yeah, I'm sure that anyone who is in this position has been gifted with a variety of cliches about how good this is going to be. And, you know, it's the old one door closes, the other opens. And while that is completely true, somehow when you're in the middle of it, that doesn't sound very satisfying.
It doesn't. And I think it's better to anticipate that there will be this paradoxical mix of sensations, and to be with them and live with them and even name them and reflect on them without sort of believing that the sort of trite expression of one door closes, another door opens. There will be struggle in this, you know, adaptation. And I think that's true, frankly, of any change, any major transition. But I'm saying that rather than immediately focusing on or being preoccupied with what's next, that we have to make the exit with both grit and grace. We have to figure out a way of attending to it that recognizes the miles we've traveled, that recognizes the substance of our work, that recognizes completion.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. She is a professor of education at Harvard University. We're talking about some of the ideas that you'll find in her book, Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. It's published by Ferrer Strauss Giroux. Certainly, we'd be very happy to hear from people who are listening. If you want to talk about your own experiences with leave-taking, big changes in your life and how they went and how you dealt with them, I'd certainly be happy to hear the stories. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We also have email. If you'd like to send along a thought that way, you certainly may. will-talk@illinois.edu. And I think, you know, some of the people that you profile here in the book are dealing with really, really momentous changes in their lives, bigger than the one I happen to be living through at the moment. One thing that I think that is very important that you talk about in the book that I think people, if they think about it a little bit, will understand. And that has to do with the idea that you can point to some place where the exit takes place. You know, it's metaphorically speaking, putting your foot out the door. But mm-hmm. the point that you make is that really, when people think about this, first of all, they realize that they'd been leaving for a while.
Right.
That it doesn't really happen. You know, when the foot goes out across the threshold, that's not really when it starts.
Yes. I talk about this as being exit signs bold and blurred. That is, that there are these moments that all of us can identify when all the forces and sensations come together in a perfect storm and we say, we are out of here. Mm. We make the announcement, we put our foot out the door. And in those moments, with all the people I talked to, they were able to describe those moments vividly in technicolor, you know, as if it was a photographic memory, what they were wearing, what they said, how their breathing felt, who they talked to, all of that. But the other notion is that exits are blurred, and if you look retrospectively at your exit, you realize that for a long time you've been leaving, and it has been, as the protagonist in my book call it, it's been a messy process. It's been an iterative process. As you've sort of nothing linear about it, as you've circled around and reversed yourself and been ambivalent and tried to move towards the exit. The other thing that these protagonists say about their major exits is that once they're out, they've said, I'm out of here, and they move out, there are the reverberations that follow of wondering, did I do the right thing? Did I make the right decision? Where am I going now? So it is both very clear and very blurred. It is very bold and it is very cautious and iterative, both.
I'm sure this varies with every person. Did people give you any sort of consistent answer to the question, how long did it take you after sort of the official foot out the door time before you felt that you had processed it to the point where you could say, okay, now I'm actually gone?
Right. Well, I think you're absolutely right. This is a very individual process. All I can say is that it is there. The sort of aftermath and aftershock is there for all the people I talk to. I think it would be helpful to your listeners to get a sense of the huge variety of exits in this book, because I think those also shape whether it's a long or short aftershock. So one of the people who exits is a 16-year-old Iranian young man who immigrates because his parents insist upon it from a war-torn country to the United States. Another is a middle-aged gay activist man who talks about exiting the closet to find home and wholeness. Another is an anthropologist who spends 4 years in the field documenting the voices and perspectives of Mexican-American mothers who are learning how to be community organizers and recognizes that her exit from the field must be done with purposefulness, with care, with respect for the mothers. I mean, anthropologists and social scientists tend to be preoccupied, once again, with gaining access to the field, but forget about the sort of moral dilemmas and even empirical dilemmas that come with exiting. Another is a middle-aged woman, well, about 58, who has started a nonprofit in rural Wisconsin for adolescents, most of whom have failed in school, been pushed out of school, and she's developed educational environmental programs for them, built this extraordinary, small, strong organization, decides after 25 years of giving her entire life to it that it's time to leave, both for herself but also for the organization so that it can continue to grow. Once having made this very purposeful exit, chosen the exit, you know, and created this wonderful ceremony, she leaves, and then she feels bereft, marginalized, empty. So that's a story of someone who chose it, who even surrounded it with ceremony and ritual, but found it devastating once she had left. The story of an intensive care unit attending physician who trains his residents how to prepare their patients for the two exits in the extreme environment called the ICU, the exit back to the floor of the hospital and the exit to death. And there are several others, but the last exit I talk about is the ultimate exit of death.
Well, we have a caller to bring in at this point. Let's do that. We have someone listening over in Belgium, Indiana, or not Indiana. It's over in Vermillion County. Line 4, our toll-free line. Hi.
Hello, and how are you today?
Okay.
Sad news, sir, sad news. Your exit, you know, yes, it's your exit, but it's also my exit. I mean, you know, in a way, been listening to you for many years. A very regular person on this show, as everybody's aware of. And do you actually know that you come on at 2 o'clock in the morning in Taipei?
I did not know that.
Yeah, you do. I've listened to you everywhere you can imagine. And I'm going to miss you. And I know I'm going to be much more productive for 2 hours in the morning because I spend a lot more time listening to you than I probably should. And maybe your guest could talk about that. You know, your exit is one part of it, but in this situation where you affect other people's lives, it's an exit for us, too, that we, I'm sure, are going to miss.
Well, I thank you for the thought. See, this is why I was so hesitant talking about myself to start out, because I certainly don't want it to turn into an opportunity for people to call and say what a swell guy Dave is. That's really not the point.
But I think your caller makes an excellent point,
yes,
which is that when we each make our exits, particularly the monumental big ones that are relatively public, that other people in our lives, whether we know them or not, who think about us and who have encounters with us, in this case, daily over the years, it also has a reverberation effect. It is an exit for them as well. And lots of people who I talk about that. That is, in making our own exits, there are other people, particularly within our families and within our neighborhoods and communities, who experience the exit as well. The other important thing that the caller said is, he said, I'm going to miss you, right? That is, that one of the things that we talk about in making good exits is the opportunity for people to stand up and say how they feel in community. And for those who are exiting, to find a way to not only tolerate but welcome and accept the feelings of those around us who are really talking from their hearts.
Well, I appreciate very much the comments of the caller. We have someone else. We need to put our feelings on hold here for just a moment because we have to do this odd thing that we do sometimes. You know, we're talking about something very serious, but we're also in the process of encouraging people to support the station. And I guess I would say that one reason to support the station is that we actually have conversations like this, and we do take things like this very seriously and try to think about them carefully and talk about them thoughtfully. So I put this into the schedule thinking, well, this would be a good thing to talk about, and it reflects where I am now. And then I guess it was last night I started thinking, now, wait a minute, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? So anyway, we're doing it, and I'm glad that we're talking, and I'm very glad to have Professor Lawrence Lightfoot on the show. So now here, let's take a couple of minutes and ask people for money.
Well,
talk about, we're going to take the wheel and we're going to wrench it right off and go right off to the side.
Except it's not a complete dramatic shift here, David, because as I listen to the last caller and as I personally think about this, mm-hmm. and I think about how, you know, I encouraged you earlier to really be very frank, because I think that this type of program does touch people's lives. And we talked about earlier that this is, you know, just the list of things that the list of exits that you make are, there's just an extraordinarily long list. And so obviously there are people out there for whom this is meaningful and touches them. I also was just thinking, you know, a couple of things the caller said, or the author said you have to stand up and say how you feel. And I think this is a good opportunity to give our listeners an opportunity to say how they feel. And not just about you, but about the station overall. And one of the things that always helps me when I'm in a period of transition and change is to know that I have support from the people around me. And I think our listeners give us an incredible amount of support. So without being, you know, too strange, I am going to say it's time to step up. It's time to say how you feel. It's time to support the station. And we want to hear from you this morning at 244-9455. We did already for Focus. We had set that goal. We'd like to get $1,000 before the end of Focus. We already have 3 web pledges. We still have a long way to go to get to $1,000, but we can do it. And we want to hear from you at 244-9455 or go to willpledge.org.
Yeah, there are certain constants, and I do think that we have a certain approach to doing things here on WYLL. That's constant. That's not going to change.
Right, that won't change.
That won't change. And actually, for the next couple of months, July and August, if you tune in between 10 and noon, guess what you're going to hear? Me! Some of my greatest hits. So it'll be a little while before my voice goes away completely. But, you know, it's bigger than me. It's bigger than Focus.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing we really want to get across to people is just the support, the listener support is vital. We can't do it without you. And there are many people who have heard us year after year and have said, well, yeah, that's right. I understand that. And those people, we cannot thank them enough. The reason that we do this, sit down here in front of the microphone, is it's our best way of reaching out to people who listen but who have not been supporters. And to say, if you think the programming is good, help pay for it. It's really very simple and very straightforward. That's really what it's all about.
Exactly.
So, 244-9455 or willpledge.org. Our guest in this part of Focus is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. She is the Emily Hargroves Fisher Professor of Education at Harvard University. She's the author of the book Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free, published by Ferris, Strauss, and Giroux. All right, now let's talk with somebody else here. We got a caller in Champaign, line number 1. Thanks for being patient and waiting. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually... I was an academe as an educator, teacher, and professor, and in Chicago, and it was difficult. But I got tired of all the politics, and if I could have continued on teaching without the politics, I would have stayed. But anyway, it was great. It took a while, and I know you'll do it, and you'll find new opportunities. But you know, there was what you were talking about. There was happiness and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and then maybe a little the other direction. But you really got to do the picked and choose and all that kind of stuff. So that's just briefly mine. But anyway, you talked about the final exit, and actually you get to be a certain age, and you think about the final exit. My concern is, and that's we got my attention, my children and my grandchildren. So, what could you say about that?
Well, one of the people who I draw a portrait of in this book has incurable cancer and is dying, is in hospice at home. And he wants to die at home among his family, his children, his grandchildren, his friends. And his parents, actually, both died at home as well. And his wife, said Gwen, promises that she will give him a wonderful, as she says, fabulous exit, a monumental exit in the intimacy of their home. And so for the last weeks of his life, he is surrounded by his children, who actually are middle-aged, and they live all around the world. They come back to be with him. And they have, for the first time, the opportunity to have the conversations that they've never been able to have in the earlier parts of their life, conversations that are challenging and difficult and searching and truthful, taking the place of the silences and fear and opaqueness that were there before. That there's also these generational shifts as his children begin to take care of him, his daughters begin to make beautiful garments to put over his withering body. His sons feed him breakfast every morning. They read him the papers like he used to read them, their bedtime stories. His grandchildren are playing all around, offering kind of proclamations of love and adoration in the midst of all of their play. His friends come with fresh vegetables and fruits and political conversation and music and musings. And ultimately, he leaves in the reluctant arms of his community. But there are these opportunities in the last weeks of his life for development and growth and transition and even transformation, both for the person who is dying and for those who are witnessing and participating in it.
You know, I also think about, and I've read this to my children, Tuesdays with Maury, which was, I think, probably opened this up a long time ago, but certainly didn't get the depth that you're talking about. But the final thing in terms of David versus mine as an educator, I was able to reach so many people. I was a mentor and all that kind of thing. But David was able to reach a lot more people than I ever reached. So great job. And that's the okay. That's
all right. Hey, thanks very much. Thank you. This is something that the point of ritual and how important it is, and the fact that we as a society, we really don't have ready-made rituals for this. Everybody has to make their own.
Right.
And you really make the argument that doing that, having some way to mark, if you can, some way to mark those transitions,
it's
really important.
Right. I mean, if we look at most non-Western societies, we see sort of how much of these leave takings and exits and transitions are wrapped up in rites and rituals and ceremonies, you know, and how little of that we have in our culture, in our institutions, in our schools, in our families. And this book argues that this needs to be a cultural agenda, as well as an institutional agenda, as well as a individual agenda. We need to find ways, I think, first within our families, to innovate, to invent rituals for particular occasions, and particularly for those occasions that mark completion, endings, that allow us to see how far we've come and allow us to mark the transition. I have been in many schools and in many classrooms where you see teachers who do a wonderful job of developing rituals for all kinds of things, you know, whether it is at the end of a day in a classroom, each day a child gets to choose a poem that he will read or she will read before the end of the day, marking the end, or whether it's everyone singing a song at the end of the day, saying goodbye. The other thing about rituals is they give us a chance to sort of both feel and think with our heads and our hearts, that it is a time when we recognize the emotional dimensions and qualities of leave-taking, not just the kind of cognitive, rational aspects of it. And finally, it's a time for expressivity and art. You know, I always think of ritual as combining with music because that's my particular art form. But, you know, dance and theater, ways of expressing ourselves that involve not only the heart and the head, but I would argue the body, you know, so that we really experience the expression of goodbye and departure in a deeper way.
Mm. Well, let us talk with somebody else here. We have another caller from Belgium here, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is the other guy.
The other guy. Yeah, we got two guys who listen in Belgium.
Yeah, I'm going to miss you a lot, too.
Well, thanks.
So,
I appreciate that.
That's all. Because the other guy called, I thought I had to call.
Oh, because also I'd hear from both Belgium guys. No, I appreciate that.
Thank you for your time.
I appreciate that. All right, very good. It's a small town, Belgium. And we got two guys listening there. We're at the point here. Maybe we'll take another little break. This will be a good opportunity for us to one more time ask people to support the station, and we'll get back to our conversation with Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. We have been here talking about, you know, being around for a long time. Yeah, I've been around for a while, but the station has been on the air for a very long time. 1922, we started out. And it was small, and I don't know how many people heard it when it was first on the air, and we've come some way since then. But I think that the one constant in all that time has been the attitude that we approach the programming with, that we hope that we would give people something that would make their life better. And that I think actually really even reflects the mission of the land grant university. You know, the idea was to give people practical tools to be good citizens, to build themselves and their community. Well, in a way, I think we're still trying to do that, to give people something they can, either listening to this show or other shows, they can take away something useful, some tool, figuratively speaking, that they can go out and, you know, maybe make their life and their community a little bit better. And we've been doing that for a long time. And I'm glad to say we can do it. We can have these long, luxurious conversations. We don't have to pause. We don't have commercials. But that's only because listeners support the station. You know, the only way this works, this crazy public broadcasting thing, the only way it works is if people not only listen but support. And that's what we're doing here this morning. We're just saying, okay, now's the time. You've been listening. Now's the time for the support piece.
Need a little prompting.
A little nudge. Molly Delaney, she is our education outreach director. She's here with me. I'm so very happy that she could be here to help nudge.
I'm always happy. I'm quite a nudger, as you know. Some people call it nagging. But, you know, I think about the show this morning, and obviously this is a very emotional show for the callers. It's an emotional show for me, and David, I'm sure it's an emotional show for you. But I just think about overall, you know, over the time of focus has been on the air, how many times people have been entertained, how many times people have been better informed, people have come away touched, their life has been affected in some way. And you are right, that's been a longstanding mission of not just the Focus program, but really we try to do that in all of our programs here at WILL, and that won't change. And we need to hear from you to keep that from changing. We want to stay true to our mission. We want to be able to offer that to the community for years and years and years to come. We do have some great news. We had set a goal for $1,000 during that the entire morning of Focus, and we've actually gone from raising $4,000 so far this morning to $4,587. So we're $587 toward that $1,000, which means in a little math in my head, we have 413 to go. We can do it. We need to hear from those members of the community that support this kind of program, that support our station. And we want you to go to the phone at 244-9455 or go to willpledge.org. And we'd certainly like to hear from you during this next hour and 20 minutes or so. We'd like to say thank you to Carolyn of Mendota, who's called in a pledge. And we've gotten 4 web pledges during our time so far. Still a ways to go. We need to hear from more people. So it's time to make that commitment. It's time to, as I believe Sarah mentioned earlier, the reluctant arms of the person's community. And I think that that's how we look at David leaving, is we're reluctant to let him go, but we are a community who supports what he does. And we want to hear from you in support of the station this morning.
All right. I have nothing to add. Other than our guest in this hour is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. She's professor of education at Harvard University. We're talking about what you will find in her book, Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. And we will continue to talk here for about another 15 minutes or so. Questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll go back to the phones. We have some other callers there in Champaign. So we'll start with line number one. Hello.
Hi. Appreciate your existence. You're a tremendous resource, but you're one of many people who are living much longer. You're relatively young. So some of our excitement about your leaving is to know what you're going to do with the rest of your life. It might be a total change, but I look at the overall resources in the country that have retired. Some retire and almost die immediately, and some go on and do things. And I wonder what is in your imagination.
That's a very difficult question people continue to ask me, and I think I'm not sure I even have enough time here to go into that. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll promise to think about that, and maybe I can tell you sometime. I'm going to deflect the question a little bit because I guess I'm interested in going to our guest here, to Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, and what I'm going to take it and turn this a little bit and have you talk about the fact that people do live long lives. And that they may have many identities, they may have many jobs, they have many families. And what that does is it certainly increases all of the exit points in people's lives. Do you think that we're actually that's a fact of life now, is that there are more people today have more exits than they have in the past?
Absolutely. I want to take that on in two ways. First of all, demographers tell us that our young people who are in their early 20s, given that they will have such a long life and given the nature of our economy, that they will have 10 careers, not just 10 jobs in their lives, which means that they will have to learn how to begin anew, but they'll also have to learn how to end with kind of grit and grace. Mm. And so that even across the lifespan, there will be many, many more exits that have to do with work and that require this kind of transition. It's also true that demographers tell us that we're living longer, so the arc of our life has changed. And the book that I wrote before this book was called The Third Chapter, which looked at new learning, passion, risk, and adventure, it's called, in the 25 years after 50, so between 50 and 75, we now recognize that this is not the ultimate phase of our life, but the penultimate one, the next to the last one, and that many people leave their work and leave their institutional life and the roles that they play in the economy when they still have a lot of life and learning and adventure and innovation. It's still within them. And there is this process now of people really following, with your caller, use the word, their imaginations, trying to figure out other things that they might do, not only to be expressive and to be fulfilled, but also during this time of life, there's also this concern with serving others, with leaving an imprint, with leaving a legacy, not just making it in the world. So our sort of perspective shifts. From making it up the ladder of opportunity to the top to trying to figure out a way how to be useful and how to serve, as well as how to be fulfilled and mm-hmm. how to innovate. Mm-hmm.
Well, I must apologize to the caller. I really didn't answer his question, but I don't think that I have much of an answer right now. I'll have to get back to you on that. Somebody wants to send in some suggestions, you can drop me an email for what's next.
But David, one of the points that I was trying to make earlier is that, as we attend to our exits, it's a little bit, for most of us, premature to be able to articulate and name where we're going. I mean, this process of finding purpose and direction, I think, comes after being reflective and generative and aware of the exit opportunities.
Okay. Well, I thank the caller. I'm going to go on to somebody else here. This is also Champagne. Line number two. Hello.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to maybe make a comment about retirement. I'm fairly recently retired, and I'm working on my third year. And I was able to listen to your program more often since I've been retired and followed up on a lot of your reading suggestions, and have found that being very useful and very enjoyable. I just want to comment a little bit about my retirement. We had a ceremony where I was at, but I'd been there longer than anybody else in the building, and so it was kind of strange. I didn't want a little synopsis from the commander director here, because he had not been there less than half the time I'd been there. So it was kind of shallow when they make some kind of statements about what great work you've done when you've actually been there longer than everybody else. So I submitted a little work history of what I thought was important of what I've done, which was pretty well received. And it was a little hard for me. I didn't leave because I wanted to, but it was just time. And, in the back of your mind, I think work defines who you are, and then all of a sudden you're just retired. So I felt guilty for about 2 weeks, you know, like I get up in the morning and said, gee, I should be at work, you know. But I got over that, and I'm now to the point where I think retirement's the best job I ever had. So I just wanted, you might comment about the retirement ceremony and how that might be improved a little bit, because it's hard if you're, in fact, a senior person there and all these fresh young faces don't realize really what you've contributed to the organization. And, you know, to a great extent, it's a lot of your life's blood is what you've done. And it's hard to be recognized by that when nobody's still around. But anyhow, I wish you well, and I'm sure you'll do well. It's just, it is kind of a difficult transition for a little while, and then you settle in and decide you now have time to do with what you could had short time before, and now you can spend the time to do it something that you're pleased with the end product. You're not rushed. Mm-hmm. So perhaps your guest could comment.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for the thoughts.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, I think that that's a wonderful comment, and part of what I think needs to happen, particularly with people who have been at a place for a long time, given their life's blood to it, it's been their life's work, is that the ritual at the end has to be, I think, both ceremonial and substantive. And in order for it to be that, the person who's leaving has to, as this gentleman did, participate in making it so. That is that I have seen retirement parties where people really design the ceremony themselves because only they know what they want and what they need in order to feel as if they've completed this work and this time with dignity and with respect and with appreciation. And so they do provide people with a script. They do say who they want to stand up and say something. And they do, in fact, have the opportunity to stand up themselves and be counted and express their mix, because it's always a mix, their mix of feelings about leaving. So I think there needs to be, one can't control these, but there is a sense of agency here, and there is a sense of sort of composing and designing these rituals in a way that is satisfying to you. You are the one. And you can only do it because you're the only one who's had this long arc of experience with the organization, and the only one who really knows your own perspective, the depths of your own feelings, and can express them in the way that's appropriate for the occasion.
I said I didn't want it to be about me, but I may make it about me again and maybe say something that other people can relate to. I guess part of my feeling is that while on the one hand that it seems like people want to give me a parade, what I'd really like to do is just sneak out the back door. Now, why is that?
Well, I think it begins with something we said earlier, that this is a society that, you know, where we are not socialized or schooled in appreciating and understanding the exits, even making them visible and attending to them. We don't see the importance of them. But I think it's a huge missed opportunity, both for the person who's slithering out in the shadows and for the people who want to recognize them and celebrate them, whose exit, as one of your callers said earlier, whose exit it is too, right? And in order to sort of experience that completion, it seems to me, and mark it, you need to you know, sort of deal with the discomfort that you may feel because you've never experienced this before, and our society hasn't given us the opportunity to design these occasions in a way that they become part of the sort of cultural landscape and institutional landscape.
Yeah. We're coming down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left, maybe 2-3 minutes. I want to come back to another idea. I think I maybe brushed up against it, but I'd like to have you talk about it, and that is the idea that we all through the day, essentially, we do little goodbyes. We're always sort of saying little goodbyes. And your argument is that one should pay attention to those because there is some relationship between how we handle the little goodbyes and how we handle the big ones.
Right. I mean that, again, there are no sort of cultural practices that sort of recognize the importance of saying goodbyes. I say in the book that one of my favorite views of my children has always been of their backs. And when they were small, I used to run to the window, and as they were going off to school, to watch their backs, to see if their backs were strong, to see if their spines were strong as they moved off to school, to sort of regard and watch that exit. That was a daily exit. Somehow I knew my recognition of that exit was important to all the exits that my kids would experience throughout their lives. And the sort of important exit, for example, of that's cumulative and that's iterative, of watching your children move away towards independence and being able to restrain yourself from hovering and being in the way of their establishing their own autonomy. So there are these ways in which these small micro moments, whether it's singing a lullaby to your child at night, goodbye until morning, whether it's a hug at the airport, whether it's goodbye before school, that these really do, I think, put us in practice of marking exits. And in some ways, not to make too big a deal about them, but memorializing those moments as part of our lives. It's also true that sometimes little goodbyes are the last time that we see people, right? We don't know what's going to happen within the day or within the year. And so it's important to lock eyes, to look into people's face, to regard one another, and to say in those moments, goodbye.
We have a couple of callers here, probably not time for both. We'll try to do at least one. Urbana, line one. We'll go there first. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I was calling, I missed part of the show, about the kind of exit that you experience when you have someone in your life that becomes critically ill, you know, and recovers and repeatedly, you know, sort of with cancer treatment, and how that might be a different kind of exit than just the typical, oh, they get sick and they die. Is that something you can address?
Well, I think that, again, that is a kind of exit that at least many of the people I talked to, said was this kind of blurred exit. It doesn't happen all of a sudden. It is iterative. It is messy. It is difficult. And so it requires, you know, kind of a much more longitudinal, long-term, I think often anguished set of goodbyes. But I think at each of these stages, we have to hang in and be as true to our feelings and authentic to our feelings as possible with that, even at each of those stages. And even if we don't know the exact moment or can't predict the exact moment when someone will actually pass away.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And then, David, I just wanted to tell you that I have a 30-year-old son, and when he was a toddler, many days you were sometimes the most frequent adult voice in my ear. And I want to tell you how much I really appreciated that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's very kind.
Well,
we're at the point here where we have to stop for this hour. We have another caller we cannot take. I'm very sorry to say that, but I'm very pleased to have had the conversation. And I think that there's much in this book for people, whether you are right at an exit point or you're close, or, well, it's always just around the corner. It has that way of doing that. So there are some things here you can think about and look at the book. The book we've talked about is titled Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Farrah Straus and Giroux is the publisher. And our guest, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, is the author. She's professor of education at Harvard University. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
I was delighted to be here. Thanks so much.